focused on, oh, I need results now, like this isn't paying off, this isn't working out, and blah blah. But whereas once you learn to see that you're learning things along the way, then it becomes like a challenge, and it becomes something that you enjoy, not just because of what you've achieved on the pitch, X, Y, and Z, or where, what club you're at. It's like, I feel pride in why I'm doing this more than what I'm getting out of it sometimes, if that makes sense.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the Club Sun podcast. We are your host, Marcus Sundin, and alongside me is Alexander Brams, as always. Today, we are welcoming back a previous guest, our guest from episode 20, actually. So it's been quite some time since the first time. We are welcoming back Nina Wilson. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a while, but yeah, can't wait to get into it.
It's a pleasure to bring you back on. As I mentioned, you were on as episode 20, and now we are probably going to launch this at episode 99. So obviously there has been happening a lot since you went on for the first time. And one of those things are actually that we start this season, we start our episodes with some fire questions. So if you're ready for that, we'll just kick it off with that.
Sure. Step.
Here we go. Gloves on or gloves off?
Gloves on, definitely.
Favorite goalkeeper of all time?
I'm going to have to go with Mark Schwarzer, Australian.
Wow. Yeah. Favorite goalkeeper you have played with?
Oh, that's a tough one. I've had some good ones. I'll have to go with Faye Baker. I played about Brighton. She was amazing.
Gotcha. We'll get back to that. And lastly, most important aspect within goalkeeping?
Resilience, definitely.
Resilience. We'll definitely get into that as well, because I remember the first time we had you on, Nina, the topic was mindset, mentality at elite level. We had a chat about the importance of mentality within our position of goalkeeping. And obviously, that's something Alex and I love talking about here on the podcast, because we find it very important as well. And with that, obviously, as you mentioned, most important aspect in your opinion is resilience. Can you elaborate a little bit about why you think resilience is so important within goalkeeping?
I mean we don't even need to kind of explain to people that have played in goal that obviously we have to be used to making mistakes. I think we're in the most vulnerable, if you like, position on the pitch, because as we said probably before, everyone else behind you has someone else in front of you, sorry, has someone else behind them when they make a mistake. Whereas obviously with us, you just got the goals. So I think that's fairly self-explanatory. But I think just in terms of goalkeeping as a position within a team is, I think, general resilience, not even on the field, I think is very important. And that's probably something I've explored a little bit more as I have progressed in my career, in terms of, you know, I'm sure there's keepers listening now, you know, they want to be number one, or they think they should be number one, and they might have to go through spells, as all keepers will do, no matter how good you are, where you're not playing, whether you, rightly or wrongly. So I think that aspect of resilience doesn't probably get spoken about quite as much, but I think is just as important to keep that self-belief and, you know, keep maintaining the same levels of dedication and kind of hard work during those spells, I think really does take a lot, and not a lot of people have that in them. So I think, yeah, that's something that I've probably explored and like really kind of, I think, do quite well and might set me apart from others is that resilience within myself, just not just on the pitch.
Love it, love it. And talking about you, Nina, obviously, we want to talk a little bit about what has been going on since we had you on for the first time, because at that time you were at Watford and you've been at some different places. You've been overseas as well. Can you talk us through, now you are, if the listeners don't know out there, you are at Sheffield United. Can you talk us through a little bit about what have happened since you were on? I think it's almost 1.5, might have been 2 years since we had our last chat. So can you tell us a little bit about what you have been going through?
Yeah, so I think the last time we spoke, yeah, I was at Watford, and then it must have been during lockdown. Shortly after that, I went abroad during lockdown to Iceland to play in the professional league there. Not particularly something I knew much about. I took quite a big risk on that one to leave the English league. And really in a time of uncertainty, to be fair, obviously throughout the whole world. The opportunity just came to me and I thought, I'm just going to say yes and do it, because it was the opportunity to go full time. I was very well supported by the club and by the city that I was living in Iceland. I think the structure is a little bit different there, in terms of, it's very well supported by local sponsors. All the football teams there kind of are built upon, it seems like, you know, local businessmen and local sponsors and local businesses. So that was really eye-opening. And I thought that was something that really stood out to me when I was living there, in terms of maybe how the English league or other European leagues can maybe do a little bit better, because that really did impress me. And I felt really well supported as a player. And just as a lifestyle, I think Iceland's an amazing country, amazing people that I met there. I was really accepted like family there, so it was a really good experience. But that was only just during lockdown. I wasn't really particularly missing anything in England, so I thought, why not? And I think it's probably a good message to get out there, that if these opportunities to play and not necessarily go full time, because they're quite rare experiences, but if opportunities to play do come up, then I would say more often than not, say yes, especially if you are a young goalkeeper like I was at that time. Just say yes is my outlook on life in general, really, but also in goalkeeping. That was an amazing experience. And I was there for about 3 months, 4 months in the end, and then I just came back.
Yeah, and in those lines as well, what you mentioned there is, I think, something important to highlight as well is doing something that makes you feel uncomfortable, right? Because in those situations, that's where you really develop as a human being, and also on the pitch as well. Again, Alex, yeah, and I has both tried to doing something that's very uncomfortable, as you did here as well. I am actually here again in a few days, going back to the States. But I remember the first time I left Denmark to go to the States, I was so uncomfortable. Was this the right thing to do? But looking back at it, it was probably the best decision for me to do, because I had to stand on my own feet. I had to do it all by myself, really. Mm. I had to live by myself. I had to all these things on a personal level, but also on the field. There wasn't someone to, after a bad game, come to say to you, you're going back for a meal at your mom and dad's or whatever. You had to just go back to your dorm room and then figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
But also in those lines, in your career, when you went from, let's say, elite level to professional football, what was kind of the differences you saw? Because obviously we'll get into the development of the women's game as well, because obviously the women's game is taking tremendous steps at the moment, right, in the right direction, obviously, which is amazing to see. But
yeah,
what would you say was the biggest difference from being a semi-pro goalkeeper to being a professional full-time player?
I think one of the main things that stood out was like the loading, because your body just physically isn't used to it. There's something I noticed when I went to London City as well. The schedule was just so full in terms of gym, running, getting meetings in and things like that. I think that was very difficult to manage at the beginning, and I probably didn't manage it that well, to be honest, at the beginning. But that's, that's, I think, something that you learn as on the job almost. I think you can never really, no matter how much extra you do, like, and I'm always doing extras, I've always done extras throughout my whole career, but you can never prepare yourself for I think the loading that does happen. And I picked up a few niggles here and there and injuries just here and there, just because of that. But yeah, I think I wouldn't say that in terms of the players and the team, it was too much different, because I would always, I don't have anything but good things to say about any like team that I've been on in terms of the levels of professionalism and levels of dedication and, you know, qualities like that. So I would say it wasn't too much of a shock to the system for me personally in terms of that. But yeah, I think the physical side of it was probably the biggest thing, really.
Yeah, I keep completely understand, and I've also tried it myself going from Denmark to Norway, where we were professional, and where the workload was just more, and they just expected more from you. And when you weren't used to that, it was a little bit harder. And I know from college and preseason in college is crazy when you have 2 meetings a day plus 2 practices a day. It's just they demand so much from you, which is also nice, which is what you love. So for me, it was just a great experience. And it sounds like it was a great experience for you to go abroad as well. So talk about the trip back to England and going to first London City Lioness and then to Sheffield.
Yeah, so I came back, I think, just before the January transfer window at that point. So what we're talking, I think it was November 2020, something like that. So realistically, I didn't miss too much. I missed about half the season, but I think the games might have been cancelled at that point anyway. So I came back. But prior to that, I'd been like at the top of the league below with Watford. So we were hoping to get promoted. Originally the plan was to go back to Watford because, you know, I love that club. I built with the team. I played that whole year. And I mean, I think I can say now, but I feel like we should have gone up. But in the end, that's not what the league was decided as to happen. So there wasn't, I think there was one, sorry, I can't remember, but we didn't get promoted in the end anyway, because we didn't finish enough games in that season. So in order to continue, I needed to look for another team in the Championship, which is the second league in the country. So it's a mix of a full-time and a part-time league. And London City offered me the chance to train with them, just because I couldn't sign for anyone. I was outside the transfer window. It was a really good experience. It was, like I said, real full schedule and like a very professional team, very professional setup, and learned like a really good amount there. I ended up then signing for them in January during the window. And I stayed there just until the end of the season, just to get back into the English league. You know, I learned loads from their goalkeeper there as well. She's an American keeper. She played in the NWSL, so she was just an absolute athlete, to be fair. And a lot of the players there were, like I said, the schedule was so full. In my head, I felt like it was, even though I'd just come from full time. I learned a lot there, and then I moved on to Sheffield at the end of that season, and here I am, still here. So yeah, but it was difficult leaving the league, because it wasn't a guarantee that I'd get back into the league. It is a very competitive league, and it's only getting more and more competitive. So I think that's the main message really that I would have, is that I did take a real big risk to do that. But and I think I got a lot of raised eyebrows when I did that, because it was like, why'd you leave the English league to go to the Icelandic league? Like, what even is that about, kind of thing? Like, it's not really that well known. But yeah, I mean, the setup was amazing, and it only kind of did, I'm really glad I did it. And like I said, I didn't really lose any time doing that. Lucky enough, here I am still around, still in the Championship.
Nice. Yeah. Good story. And it just shows that, as you just mentioned, what is really important to you is that you have resilience and that, risk are there to be taken, especially when you're young. Like, why not take a risk? If you have your gut feeling with you, take a risk. Do what you want. You can I have this, you can always go back to where you're from and do something. So if you want to go out and explore, take that risk. Myself, I'm moving to Rome to play and study in 3 weeks, and really excited for that. And that's, if that doesn't work out, I can move back in a couple of months and be like, hey, didn't work. So yeah, keep taking those risks.
Yeah, I think even like now, you know, I'm from the south in England, and I've literally packed my whole life up and moved up to Sheffield because that's the dedication level that I have. And again, I do get quite a few raised eyebrows, like, wow, you moved from the south, like, just for football. And we're not full time yet, and we're just and I think people would think, oh, well, like, you know, why would you do that? But I think you have to take those risks if you believe in yourself that much, and you just have to make sure that it pays off one day. And I mean, it is paying off, you know, I love it. So yeah, I think it's all about the process. You have to love the process, I think, more than anything. I think a lot of people are very focused on, oh, I need results now. Like, this isn't paying off, this isn't working out, and blah, blah, blah. But whereas once you learn to see that you're learning things along the way, then it becomes like a challenge, and it becomes something that you enjoy, not just because of what you've achieved on the pitch, X, Y, and Z, or what club you're at. It's like, I feel pride in why I'm doing this more than what I'm getting out of it sometimes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And something, you know, that stuck in my mind since we talked the last time, as I mentioned, the main topic. And if you haven't already, you can pause this episode and go back and listen to that, obviously, to have a better perspective on this episode as well. That topic on the first episode we did was, elite mentality, or sorry, mindset at elite level. And a story that really stuck with me was you telling us back then that you at some point was about to, or you stopped playing because you didn't really feel like it was the right thing, or you really didn't have this passion for the sport anymore. You went through some hard times and all that. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit about, obviously, we have the story back in the previous episode, but if people are just listening to this episode, you don't have to tell the whole story, but can you tell us a little bit about how you overcame hard times as a goalkeeper?
Yeah, so it was probably during the kind of the end of school, really, that I mean, I'm sure we have a lot of kind of young keepers listening now that might feel like they're maybe at a bit of a crossroad or whatever you want to call it. I was really, really focused on my schoolwork, and me being me, I need to put like not even 100% into everything. I need to put like 250% into everything, which can burn me out sometimes. And that's the point that I got to, where I was trying to do both at like so like kind of intensely that I just couldn't do both. So I decided to leave Brighton, which is where I was at, the academy in Brighton, and just do schoolwork. And at that point, I just felt like I wasn't ever going to play again. Like, I just thought, well, that's it. You know, I was 15 at this time, so young, but you know, not too young. So I felt like if I was to come back, it would be too late for me. You know, players will have already been picked up by teams, and that was the start of going into senior teams and things like that. So I just thought, I'm probably not gonna go back now, this is it. I'm gonna go and be a designer, which is what I do as well. But yeah, I didn't feel like I belonged to that level, is what it also came down to. So I felt that I was very out of place in the Brighton Academy. I'd just come from grassroots. I didn't feel like one of the good, I didn't feel like the best player. I didn't even feel like kind of one of the middle players. I honestly didn't feel like I belonged there, which looking back now was a complete lie. Like, obviously hindsight is golden at times, but looking back now, like, that was just my perspective. It wasn't actually the reality. And I think that's something that I've learned from that situation is that you are probably the biggest critic of yourself at times. I know that I am still, but I can put it into more of a realistic frame now. Like I can rationalize it better. And so I think once you become aware of that, it's really your responsibility to keep that in check, because I didn't do that, and it could have hindered me a lot more had I not had kind of very supportive people around me telling me that that wasn't the case, and telling me that they wanted me to play again and they wanted me to play for their team. And my college coach really wanted me to play for my college team just to enjoy it again and blah blah. And then that's how I got back into it, just through people persuading me to, really. So without them, I really don't know where I'd be. But yeah, it was a big lesson to learn that I can be critical of myself, and I don't think that that's necessarily a weakness, but I think to keep it in check and in a rational kind of setting is really important, just because otherwise you end up self-sabotaging, and it's nearly what happened, but here I am. So it's interesting to kind of think back on now, you know, like I said, hindsight is an amazing thing. I think anyone going through that time now, is it's good to be self-aware of your reality isn't always the reality of the rest of the world, you know. It is just purely your reality, and you know, I think it's important to question it sometimes. I think
100%, and I can definitely relate to it as well, because I remember I grew up playing on the same team until I was 14, 15, playing with all my mates, all that, back then when it was very fun. You were just enjoying the game back then, right? And at that age was really where people got, as you mentioned as well, picked up by academies, or they got into signing these youth contracts. And mm-hmm. You would also have the other players where they would, maybe when we get up to 15, 16, but they would find out that there was maybe something funny outside of football, where they could after school maybe go to a party or something else, right? So it's really where you really have to stay strong mentality wise and as you mentioned as well, with this story of you almost quitting is something that have crossed my mind a lot as well, being honest here, that especially the last few years where in college things didn't work out as I wanted, where I was doubting, is this really the right thing to do? But again, going back to really thinking about what I would have thought when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, was really, I'm doing this because I love the game. And I think that's really when you get into these tough preseason, as Alex mentioned earlier as well, which I'm again going into here in a few weeks. And I know, Nina, as well, you're going into a preseason here soon if you're not already in it. Where you have these hard times, it's really where you have to sometimes just sit back and think about why you're really doing this, because in a hard session, you obviously feel like this is the worst thing. Why are you doing this again? Blah, 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 all this. But again, if you then realize why you're really doing it, is because you really love not only football, but you love being a goalkeeper.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I think also on top of that, and what's helped me definitely during, you know, recent years or recent struggles or whatever, or when you have a bad week or a bad session, I think it's bringing it back to kind of where you came from as well. I think that's been something that's really been helpful for me in terms of thinking, you know, why did I start football in the first place, and why did I want to get to this level, or almost thinking like, what would like 15 year old me that was about to quit football think of the me now, you know, think of 23 year old me. And you know, she'd be amazed. She'd be like, oh my god, you did it, like, do you know what I mean? She'd be like, I'm so like, I can't quit because I'm gonna get there and blah, blah blah. And you almost want to like be able to tell that younger version of yourself that, like, you know, you just got to stick at it. If you believe in it that much, then you have to be consistent in doing that. I think you can't just believe in yourself when it suits you, or when it's convenient, or, you know, when you've had a good game. Like, that's where the difference comes between elite and not elite, is I think that, you know, it is a dedication to believe in yourself, even when you've just had the worst game of your life, to actually walk off the pitch and be like, that wasn't me, rather than rather than kind of beat yourself up about it, just be like, you know what, that wasn't me, or I'm a lot better than that. I know I'm better than that, and I've got the justification of, I know why I'm better than that, because I've done this and this and this, and I've got from here to here, and that's the proof. And you almost have to take stock of that, like, little kind of booklet or little like stockpile of truth, of proof that you've achieved. And I think looking back on that can be really powerful. And yeah, I think definitely helps me through weeks or periods where I think, why am I doing this? I just think back to like my younger self, and she would be over the moon to see me now, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. Once again, Nina, it's actually just inspiring to listen to, because I think a lot of people have had it like you, and I think some people might be going through what you did when you were earlier. I did myself as well. So it's about, yeah, a topic here could be like love for the position. It could be follow your dreams. And I'm a big believer in following your dreams and ignoring when people like tell you, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you should be doing this, you should be focusing more on school, you should follow the system, like the normal system in Denmark, which is school, bachelor's, master's, work. And to me, that just sounds boring. So so I think it's brilliant and really inspiring to listen to. And I want to go back a little bit, just to talk a little bit of goalkeeper specific, because this has been a lot of mindset. So you said that your colleague at London City Lioness, she was American and she was an absolute athlete. And we've talked about this before, where we think that American goalkeepers, they are really good athletes, but we have better technique in Europe.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I would say that we're definitely drilled more on technique in England. I think even just from training together with her, I think, I'm not saying that my technique is better than hers, because I don't think it is either. But I think that there's definitely more of a physical focus in America based off what she said, and, you know, just judging her and other American players that I've played with, I think it's something that we could definitely do better in England, and I would assume, I know the rest of Europe as well. So I think, apparently, especially when, you know, you watch the USA team against England, for example, I think that is the main apparent difference, is that we are I would say, technical and very tactical in the way we play, whereas I think Americans, strong, fit, like powerful, it just like completely stood out within the first session. I was like, wow, like, yes, that's a reflection of her as an athlete, but equally that is also a reflection of the system that she went through. You know, I've not really had many coaches that have been like, you need to work on your physical capabilities, because naturally, I think that I am very agile and quick. And so it's just been kind of, I've just been kind of looked at and been like, yeah, you're already a good athlete, and that's it. Like, that is the criteria in England. Whereas I think, you know, we can dig a bit deeper into that. And, you know, where are you strong physically, or you know, can you work on your jump height and things like that? I think they kind of get overlooked a little bit. You know, the gym isn't really that important at some clubs I've been to. It's kind of just seen as like an afterthought, and people that want to do gym almost, or focus on gym. And I don't know that would be allowed in America. But yeah, definitely a main difference I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking from experience, they love a gym session in America. On by the end of this podcast, we also want to talk a little bit about what happened this weekend at Wembley, where the women, the England Lioness, won the Euros. Did you? Weird question. Did you watch the game?
Yeah, I was at Wembley. Yeah, yeah.
You were at Wembley.
Yeah, I was there.
Okay. Okay. Tell us how it was, and then a little bit about your thoughts on Mary Earps.
No, it was unbelievable. So I managed to just kind of get a ticket last minute, and I couldn't even believe it when I walked in, because I got there probably 2.5 hours before kickoff, something like that, and already like the whole of Wembley's rammed. I've never seen anything like it. Like the whole of Wembley Way, like leading up to Wembley, rammed, like literally full. And I think from that point, like I got off the train and I just kind of looked out over and I was like, I think people might care about women's football now. Like it was just, I literally like had to just wipe a little tear away, because you've never seen that in this country. Like it's funny, because I actually was with my American friend, and she kind of wasn't that like amazed by it, and I said to her, like, but you're probably used to it in America though, you know, like I think that we are very behind America in that sense, and like it kind of made it very apparent at that game. And she was like, why are you crying? And I was like, you don't understand, like you're American, women's football is huge there, it's not ever been huge here really to any extent, I don't think, certainly not to that extent. So it was special. But yeah, in terms of Mary Earps, she had an absolute worldy tournament, like so consistent. I really like her. I know some people don't, but I think she has a great presence, and that's one of the main things I was watching during the games. I think she just had a great, like, some people call it arrogance, but that is goalkeeping. So I have made that argument a few times throughout the tournament, and I've just said her presence is great. And then people have been like, yeah, she's so arrogant though, isn't she? Like, oh, facial expressions, but I'm like, yeah, that's goalkeeping. Like, you need that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think
there is a difference on arrogance and confidence, right? Because some people from the outside might see it as arrogance, where us as goalkeepers, knowing the position, see it as confidence, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like Ederson, for example. Ederson, he looks arrogant, but that is just so confident.
Yeah. I think, like, I remember Joe Hart as a really good example of that. Like, he got a lot of stick for kind of the way he acted, and even off the pitch, in the tunnel, things like that. Like, he had a bit of a like swagger about it, and I think loads of people really rattled a lot of people. But when you know, like, goalkeeping, if you don't have it, doesn't like every goalkeeper has a different personality, don't get me wrong. Like, I think, and that's probably the main message I would say, like, you don't have to be that way if you're not. I'm definitely not naturally like that, but I think recently in my career I've realized I need a little bit of that. Like, I need a performance personality, if you like. And you need to have that switch between off the pitch and on the pitch, and I think it's definitely not a bad thing to have a little bit of that swagger and confidence about you, because I think if you act that way, then it breeds confidence within yourself and within your team. So that's the only thing that matters, really, like, is the opinion of your teammates and yourself at the end of the day, and your manager. So I really liked kind of the way she carried herself. She didn't look fazed by the big occasion at all. Even in the final, she looked completely chill, and like, it was just a friendly game. Like, that's the vibe I got from her. So yeah, you could tell, like, you would be like confident in front of her, I think. So that's the main takeaway I got from her. Nice. Performances.
Yeah, that's amazing. And talking about like a game personality or a game face, you can say, I remember my coach in Los Angeles, he said that, guys, you need a game face. Look at, then he showed us a clip of Buffon, where he was smiling, giving like the thing out when you say good game, and then afterwards he was just boom, stone face, and ready to eat, if you could say that. And then I was watching the game. It was Sunday, right?
Yeah, Sunday. Yeah,
Sunday. I was watching the game, and I didn't watch many games during the Euros of the women's, unfortunately. But that game, I was just, by the end when it was over, And the celebrations were there, I even got the chills, and I even got a little happy just to see, like, the players and the experience, because it's unique, and the atmosphere, like, so many people, it's crazy, and it's really, really, really put on a good show for the women's football that will just keep growing.
Yeah. Well, I think even the, probably the even more amazing thing about it when we won, like, I had a lot of thoughts after the game, but then one of the main thoughts was like the you couldn't imagine the pressure they were under as a team to like to do that and to win, let alone get to the final. Like literally the like weight of women's football, it felt like in this country, was on them winning, because without them getting to the final and without them winning in the end, like we wouldn't get half that exposure. You wouldn't get those 80,000 people, or some of them even still caring about women's football. Do you know what I mean? So you couldn't imagine, like, it wasn't just the pressure of England winning Euros. I think it was the pressure of how much will people care about women's football if we don't even get out the group stages? Because, you know, there's two or three extra games that people could then watch and going to be on TV. And unfortunately, that's the way it is, that people care more when you get further in a tournament. It's the same for the men. You know, a lot of people didn't care until we got to the semi-final and would openly admit that. So much pressure was on them to do well, like just to get to the final. So to then perform in front of 80,000 people with the knowledge of that, I think as a team, like, just I felt they were so composed in doing that, especially being there and watching them. Mary Earps was a good example of that. But yeah, hopefully it continues and it fills down through the rest of the women's football pyramid now.
Spot on. And what a way to end this episode. Nina, we want to thank you so much for coming back on for a second episode, and hopefully in the future, hopefully not in 2 years' time, but before that, we can bring you back for one more. But again, thank you so much for taking your time today.
No, thanks for having me again. Good seeing you guys again. It's been a while, but yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
And to you guys still listening out there, please go follow Gloves On Podcast on your favorite social media, leave a review, and share this with one other goalkeeper for them to keep improving. Catch you on the next episode of Gloves On Podcast.